What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Movie. I'm your host, as always, Josh Bergman, and today is a very special episode because I brought back a very special guest. He is my friend from school, our Delaware spokesman. It is my buddy, Jacob Tracy. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing just great. How are you, Josh?
I am doing swell. I'm so excited to see your face again because I'm excited because we're going to be talking about a brand new movie, a spooky movie, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. It is in theaters and on HBO Max. And in addition to that, we're going to be ranking our top 7 ghost movies. But before we get into any of that, I must ask, Jake, how are you? Because we haven't seen you on the show since Minari back in early February, so a lot has happened. Godzilla vs. Kong came out. We saw it together for my birthday.
Yes, we did.
Which was awesome. The Oscars happened. And now it feels like the movie-going season, it's back in session. So what's your opinion? What's your feelings on everything that's happened since?
Well, I'm doing good. You know, still bartending. Looking to move down to DC soon. So we got big moves in the life. But yeah, about the movie scene, I've been going to the theaters a lot more. Most recently, I saw Quiet Place 2 with a bunch of my friends. And it was a sold-out screening. So that was fun. But yeah, I'm just very pumped that the movie-going experience is back. There was, you know, there's the parts of me that did love being able to stream and rent movies from home. It was nice, it was convenient, but it was hurtful for movie theaters and for the movie business as a whole, so I'm glad it's coming back. I would gladly take the inconvenience of a 15-minute drive over sitting at home, because nothing beats seeing a movie in theaters.
I bet you might be eating your words later in this episode, based on the movie we're talking about,
but yeah.
But I'm so excited to have you back on. Let's just get right into it. Today, we're going to be talking about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. This is now the third direct movie in the Conjuring franchise, not including the entire Conjuring universe. This one is not directed by James Wan, instead is directed by Michael Chavez, and this one sees the return of Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga as Ed and Lorraine Warren. And in this movie, we focus on the real-life case of The Devil Made Me Do It with Arnie Johnson. In this movie, Arnie is portrayed by Ruairi O'Connor, an Irish actor, and based on the real-life case, this is the most well-known, or the first well-known, court case in which Arnie kills someone and then they blame it on a demonic possession. So now Lorraine and Ed have to prove to the court that Arnie was possessed during the killing of the movie. So it's a mix of a possession type movie and in an investigation movie as well. And with that, we have Arnie's girlfriend, Debbie, played by Sarah Catherine Hook. And overall, in the entire Conjuring universe now, it is the 8th film. Sadly, this was a somewhat victim to the COVID-19 pandemic. It was supposed to come out in September back in 2020. Then it was pushed to June 2021, and since it is a Warner Brothers movie, it is in theaters as well as HBO Max, day and date for 30 days. Jake, what did you think of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It? What's your opinion on The Conjuring films or universe as a whole, and what were you expecting going into this movie?
So I'll start with The Conjuring universe as a whole. I've always been a big fan of it, of all 3 movies I've seen, because I've not seen any of the Annabelle films yet. And I didn't see Michael Chavez's first director credit in the Conjuring universe, which was The Curse of La Llorona. But I did see the fantastic movie called The Nun. 100%. Ooh. It's the best reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Don't quote me on that.
Best Letterboxd review movie.
Oh my God, yeah.
It was snubbed for Best Picture.
It was snubbed for everything. But I do love Ed and Lorraine Warren and Patrick and Vera. I think they do an incredible job of portraying those two. And those first 2 movies are just some of the better horror movies of the past couple years and some of the best horror movies ever, in my opinion. They're just well done with the spooks, the scares, as well as the story. So going into this one, I had my hopes. I had them high. I will say I've had a long streak recently of watching movies that many people did not like. That I did. Like, I watched Mainstream with Andrew Garfield and I loved it. And then I looked at Rotten Tomatoes and Letterboxd and no one liked it. And I was like, well, I guess I'll go screw myself. You know, I was like, I guess I'm wrong. So this one, I definitely think I thought more highly than others, but take that with a grain of salt because it definitely was a big disappointment to me. And I think that has to go with the fact of it was not directed by James Wan. So there was a whole tonal shift in horror. It felt more like a drama than horror, which I'm a-okay with. But I think this movie could have been marketed more as a drama with horror elements. I feel like that was possible. But, you know, what can you do? They're going to still try to get people in like they did with all the Paranormal Activity. With all of those where they advertise them as these super spooky movies and everyone's going to freak out. So, yeah, I guess you'd say disappointed. But more pleased than most, if that's a possible.
So are you saying that this movie did not have the spooks for you?
Did not have the spooks at all. But then again, it's been a while since a movie's really spooked me. Because I used to hate horror movies. And then I dived into them. And now it's like, I remember watching that one. Now I could fall asleep to watching, like, Insidious. But it's just one of those things where it's like, horror movies don't... takes a lot to spook me. Last time I was truly spooked was Hereditary. And that's like the last true blue horror movie I was spooked at.
Yeah, for me, spooks, once again, they come and go. I don't really get that scared during movies. And especially ghost movies like Paranormal Activity or The Conjuring. You can give me as many loud noises as you want. I will physically react as a human with a jump. And then I will just go back to my normal state of mind. It does not affect me. But with The Conjuring, the devil made me do it. With The Conjuring universe, somewhat like you, I've seen the other two Conjuring movies. Everyone loves the first Conjuring movie. I rewatched it. I enjoy it. I really like the second one, though, and James Wan really did bring another element to the unique direction that a horror movie can take, what qualifies as a jump scare, a fake jump scare, and how it builds on to something that's actually scary. Now, something that you haven't done, I've seen all the Annabelle movies. We may be going into them a bit further. I only really like Annabelle Creation. The first Annabelle, I just think, is a straight-up not good movie. The amazing movie The Nun that we saw opening night with Frenchie.
It's a great one.
Should have... best actor, Frenchie, love you so much. To be fair, I think it's the one of the worst movies, horror movies, made in the last decade. It is such a bad movie.
Oh, I would 100% agree.
Yeah, with that, pulling the curtain away, it is a really bad movie. And then, as you were mentioning, with Michael Chavez's first film in the Conjuring universe, The Curse of La Llorona, it's not a good movie. It's so bland and boring, and honestly, I was surprised that James Wan wanted Michael to come back for this one after La Llorona, because I don't think it was that good of a movie, but comparing La Llorona to The Conjuring 3, I think it's mainly a script issue with La Llorona, and honestly, it might be a script issue with a little bit of Michael itself, but The Conjuring 3, I was excited as well, and I don't think this movie really stood out in the other Conjuring movies as something that is one of the best horror movies of the decade, or potentially of all time. Overall, it is just, I thought, a rather bland movie with a storyline that, honestly, I wasn't that into the real case of Arne Johnson. I never even heard of The Devil Made Me Do It before this movie. And then I did some research, and I'm like, oh, how are they gonna do this court story of trying to convince a bunch of people that this guy was possessed? And first off, the movie isn't really that much about the court case. It's in its own, like, X-Files with Ed and Lorraine trying to figure out this trail of breadcrumbs of trying to figure out, oh, this is created by this possession, which may have possessed someone else, and that would lead us to this potential witch. And I was down for the investigation. There's this one scene in a morgue that I was a bit into, and it led us to the fat zombie, which, highlight of the movie.
Oh, but the best highlight. I can't wait for a spinoff movie.
But beyond that, when we started to get into the truth of everything, and we might get into minor spoilers, but there's a story with the witch. Not gonna lie, not only was I wasn't invested, I was confused. I did not know what the hell was going on. And while it was a fun environment, I did see this in theaters in an almost sold out showing opening night. It was a fun environment with people either jumping or laughing. The story, I just don't think that this story was warranted this movie. I think that this Conjuring movie could have gone in many different ways, and I don't think that it knew what it wanted to be in some sense. And I think because of that, not that scary, and sadly, not that interesting.
I would agree with everything you said. I will say, as you said before, I will definitely be eating my words because I watched this on HBO Max when I got home.
You were a liar!
I know, I was.
You don't like the theaters?
And after seeing it, I'm happy I didn't see it in theaters, honestly, because I don't think this movie would have been a sellout in local Delaware theaters, but I enjoyed it. It had a good atmosphere. It was like 11 p.m. All the lights were off. I was like, you know what? I got into it. I do agree the story here was way more convoluted than it needed to be. But I don't know. For me personally, what carried it was Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga's performances. that's what I think carries all three, and that's what kept me invested the most in this, and the fact that Patrick Wilson is now officially the Scream King. Just like Jamie Lee Curtis is Scream Queen, we got our Scream King. And he and Vera are like two of my favorite underrated actors that I think people overlook in their other roles too. Obviously, Patrick Wilson being a part of the Insidious universe and was in a great movie called Hard Candy. Like, he is so great in everything he does, and he really, him and Vera carried this movie. Which, side note too, I love how, once again, the daughter was sidelined. Like, the daughter in the first movie, she just gets spooked by Annabelle when she gets locked in that room. Second movie, she just points at the nun and is like, look, mommy, it's a new sequel. And then this movie, I didn't even recognize, like, they literally just, every time they were in the courtroom, she was sitting there, and I'm like, oh, that's right, they have a daughter.
I just assume, it's Judy. We're gonna, yeah. Because Annabelle Comes Home, the sequel, prequel, spin-off movie, it's everything. That is strictly focusing on Judy. So if you want more Judy Warren, watch Annabelle Comes Home. One of the highlights, I honestly think, and something that I was excited for, was to see Ed and Lorraine back, because their relationship is really integral to this movie. And because, as you said, they're great actors, I particularly love Vera Farmiga since Bates Motel. I love the two of them together. And after, what, now it's 8 years since the first one came out, we've, in a sense, grown with them. And I love them in this movie. And it even made it a bit more intense that Patrick Wilson has, minor spoilers, he has a heart attack in the beginning of the movie. So for the entire movie, he is a bit disabled, in which, like, any moment, if he exerts too much energy, something bad could happen. And I thought that was a unique take on this relationship dynamic. And I enjoy that. I applaud the creators for doing something at least a bit different in this movie, because as we were kind of mentioning, this is a bit different movie. The first two Conjuring movies are strictly haunted house movies, when this one is more of an investigation. Did you miss the haunted house? Would you want them to go back to one, or think this is something new and I prefer this?
You know, so I wanted to mention earlier, I knew a little bit more about this case because it's one I was familiar with. I remember reading, it was either like a book that included it. It was like a book of ghost cases or something back in like high school. And so I was familiar with this case. And honestly, I would have been so much more into it if it was strictly a courtroom drama and the horror elements came from them recounting what happened. The entire movie takes place in the courtroom and them doing this case, but every time they bring something up, it kind of flashes back and you get to see what they're talking about played out. And I feel like that would have been more interesting and would have been better advertised as like, oh, look, here's a different take. Like, would it have been good? That's up for debate, but at least it was something different. I feel like this one wanted to be different and tried to be different, but just failed. And then it led to a lot of disappointment. But going forward to what you were saying, I did miss the haunted house. I think that's what makes the Conjuring movies great. And even though they're not in the same universe, the Insidious movies as well, I think that's what makes those kinds of movies great, is being focused on a haunted house. But, you know, honestly, I didn't mind it. I like a change of scenery. I liked the story. I liked all the actors. Again, it was just writing and spooks, just non-existent.
And even though we were kind of missing the haunted house, I would personally say that my favorite or most memorable scenes are the ones that are focused in a house.
Yes.
Like the waterbed scene, which is one thing that Michael Chavis has did a lot in this movie, is really drawn out silences, and you know the jump scare is gonna come, which personally I think was so annoying. Like that, like, I don't like jump scares to begin with, and having like 30 seconds of silence is one of the most irritating things possible.
Yeah.
But the waterbed scene, I did think, I liked that you could easily identify, oh, that scene, the waterbed scene. And the opening exorcism scene was another highlight. I thought that seeing how the demon eventually comes to Arnie, I just thought that was really cool. I thought that was the most spookiest of anything that happened in the movie. Got some great contortionist acts as well.
Yeah, agreed. And I will say, one of the things I think this movie was missing was a visual antagonist. And I will say, in Conjuring 2, you had the nun, the crooked man. In Conjuring 1, you had the witch that you got to see. And all the Annabelles, you have Annabelle and the demon that's come around it. Even in La Llorona, you had the woman herself, the kid snatcher herself. But this one was just missing that. Like, that's all it was. Like, there is a demon. There is still that element, but it just wasn't as prominent. And it was, part of me was like, interesting. The other part of me is just like, Well, that's what it's missing, is that you're missing that visual scare of, like, there it is. Like, that's what they're hiding from.
Well, yeah, I was going to get into this, in which the first two movies, they really established themselves of creating these side, visual side characters like Annabelle, the Crooked Man, and the Nun. And you know what we got? We got a movie of Annabelle. We got a movie of the Nun. They announced the Crooked Man, but they never did anything. Now, 5 years later, I would love a Crooked Man movie.
Oh, I would too. I think that was, like, one of my favorite parts of that, like, smaller parts of Conjuring 2. And honestly, I would really like the witch's story in this movie expanded upon more, but I know what that's done in the past. And so part of me is like, you know what? Maybe it's good they didn't create a monster that was easily... Unless, you know, they do the corpse movie.
The fat corpse.
Or honestly, I just want a whole movie of people getting on that waterbed and getting spooked.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that this movie, I felt like, was a bit devoid of those side villains. You do have the fat corpse, which I just think, in the sense of the movie, it is a random corpse that is brought back to life for two scenes. Like, I doubt you can make a character out of that. But let's go into the villain of this witch, who, it's not like La Llorona or one of these other demons. It's just a person. Or is it a ghost? I'm also not sure about that, because at some points she was very interactive with them, and other points she could disappear. I was so confused.
She was definitely a person with very plot-driven witch powers, in the sense that what the plot needed her to do as a witch, she had the power to do it. And that's kind of where the bad writing comes in, is I'm all for witches. I think they can be really creepy and make, like, Blair Witch Project and The Witch. Like, you don't even have to show them to make them cool. It's just, this one just gave her, like, non-defined powers that just helped move the script to get to what I thought the tunnel in the farmhouse, that's what I just call it. But the tunnels and farmhouse, I thought those were good set pieces and led to some good action. But still, having someone who's more human as your antagonist is such the antithesis of what you want in a Conjuring movie.
But whenever there was some moment near the end when they were explaining either the witch's story or some plan, I zoned out. I cannot recall a single thing about what the importance was. I just wanted some scares, and I didn't really get that or that much interesting plot developments by the end of the movie. And leading the film on that, I was a bit let down. But as you said, some of the tunnel sequences, there's one where Vera Farmiga has, like, her double right in front of her. Like, I thought
that was cool.
Really cool. But one thing that also disappointed me that I had noticed looking back at some of the advertising is that a lot of stuff was cut out of this movie. Because back in January of this year, they did a lot of reshoots. We don't know how much. We don't know if Michael Chavez's came back. Some people say, did James Wan come back and try to do some reshoots? We don't know, but if you look at some of the footage in the marketing material, a lot of stuff was cut out. And I'd be very interested to see what was reworked, how is it reworked, what was left out. Because at some times, this movie could feel a bit disjointed of this court case, and then this investigation, and this random witch. So it's one thing to note, one thing to be aware of, and is definitely something of what could have this been.
Agreed. I think it had potential. And again, as I said, I still enjoyed this movie more than others, but it definitely was a letdown, I think, for new fans and Conjuring fans alike. I think this movie just, and again, I think a lot of it had to do with the pandemic and it really got sidelined. But, you know, I'm still hoping this is successful enough that they go along with a fourth movie, because I really want to see Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga keep returning as the Warrens. But I can understand too if this might be the button on the main Conjuring universe.
I was going to ask, so you would want a Conjuring 4, or would you want them in another spinoff film?
I definitely would want a Conjuring 4. I mean, I like these. I still need to watch the other spinoff films, but it's just like, again, it's the relationship that has been built over now three movies that I love with Ed and Lorraine. So that's why I think I really want a fourth film. But yeah, I can understand. And I know, and I actually know, I'm wondering when it'll happen, because I read recently that Patrick Wilson's creating his directorial debut.
Or he's doing Insidious
5, yes, which I'm going to talk about later. I'll bring it up later. But like, that makes me excited and makes me think that maybe he's done with Conjuring, or maybe he's just going to take a break for a bit. So I just think they need scripts like they had the first two movies, not this movie.
So in other words, bring James Wan back.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't even notice till I clicked on the movie on HBO Max. It said directed by Michael Chavez, and I was like, oh no.
Who? Who's this guy?
I was like, well, no, I recognize the name immediately because I remember like a couple days before I was looking to maybe watch Curse of La Llorona and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I would just say, I'm not too sure if I would say bring on a Conjuring 4 because as I mentioned, we're in 2021. The first one was 2013. It's been 8 years. If you wanted to, this could be a nice end to this 8-film franchise, per se.
And it had a good ending in terms of, like, them two being together, like Patrick and Vera.
So, to move on, as we were mentioning earlier, I saw this in theaters opening night. You did watch this at home. It's in theaters and on HBO Max. Would you say that this should be seen in theaters or that it should be seen on HBO Max?
I think as a Conjuring fan like myself, I wish I did see it in theaters. And I think if you are a Conjuring fan, I think this is a no-brainer you need to see in theaters. But I think if you're just like a casual horror fan, I would just... To me personally, I would say just stream it on HBO Max. I mean, mostly, I think everyone should see all these theaters and movies in theaters. I think in a perfect world. But if you're like me, I had a busy schedule this last weekend. Pretty much the only day I could have watched it was Friday night. So I was like, well, this is the chance I got.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I've been advocating so much. Go see these movies in theaters. I don't like this HBO Max plan. But Friday night, I had a free night. And the movie was coming out, and I missed the first two Conjuring movies in theaters, so I thought, man, like, I feel like I would have to go see this. I could be missing something, and it was becoming very crowded. It was a near sellout show, and of course, I can watch it at home, but I watch a lot of stuff at home. Why not? I had some gift cards. Why not go out and just spend 2 hours seeing this movie? And for a theatrical experience, it was fun. As I said, a lot of people laughed at the fat corpse. Some people were jumping, and I could see people like hear them squealing during the long areas of silence. And some aspects were nice to see visually, like when Lorraine is in the woods and it goes from day to night.
Yeah.
There's some aspects that are really cool and the vibes were fun in the theater and there were a bunch of high schoolers and I can hear them either talking or laughing throughout the movie. But I don't really think that, as I said, this movie is that scary. So I really think that if you are at home, you're, as you did, turn the volume up, turn the lights off, and you are still concentrated on the film, you don't lose that much of the experience. So I would say if you're not dying to go to a movie theater, you could just watch this at home. I'm sorry. It may be not sounding like me, Mr. Movie, but I could say you do not need to go to the theaters for this. But Jake, who or what now would you say it was the star of the movie? The one thing you can say that this was great about The Conjuring 3.
I was saying it the whole time I was describing it, but the lead actors, Patrick and Vera, I think they just held this movie together for me, and I think were the shining parts. But in a movie like this that had not enough scares, not enough plot, they still held up together. So they were definitely the shining stars for me.
I would say same exact answer. As a big fan of Patrick and especially Vera, I was excited to see them back as Ed and Lorraine. And once again, yeah, not as many scares, but I just love seeing them together. The opening scene was close. That was close for really taking the star of the movie, but I just think that the two of them together is something else in this world. And Jake, the final question of the day, how would you rank this movie on the nut scale? Would you give it an almond, lowest of the low, a walnut, negative to mixed, a cashew, mixed to positive, or the almighty peanut?
I am definitely leaning towards cashew, but I would say if there's a gray area between walnut and cashew, that's where I am. I would mostly lean towards cashew. Again, as I said, I enjoyed this movie a lot more than most, and I think, again, that goes to the lead performances, and that just goes to my love for horror movies and for the story. I don't think it was executed well, but I do love the story. I think it's a really interesting story and honestly a really cool case to read about because the story doesn't focus on the coolest or the weirdest aspect, which was people in a courtroom were trying to blame first-degree murder on demonic possession. Like, if you did that nowadays, people would think you're crazy, and they would be like, you're just trying to avoid blame, but this is, like, the first time ever. It's such a cool case. I just think story was not written too well, but I'll stick with cashew. I'll stick with cashew, but it definitely probably on a subsequent viewing probably would lean the walnut.
Overall, I'm also in the mixed. I know it's my list. I can do whatever, my ranking. I can do whatever I want, but I don't have a middle ground. So overall, I do feel a bit more negative about this. So I will give The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, a walnut. There's some fun stuff in this. If you have the right vibes, it can be a good time. But I just think that the story was very dull, very confusing. And in a way, it could be very confusing. Love the performances, but this is a weird note to come off of the first two Conjuring movies. But that is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. As I said, it is currently in theaters as well as HBO Max. And Jake, since this is a movie that is in theaters, do you know what I have?
What do you have?
I have some box office numbers!
Woo!
So, as of opening weekend, as we're recording this right after, in opening weekend, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, grossed $24 million opening weekend.
Hell yeah.
Now, since the beginning of the pandemic, this is the fourth highest opening weekend for any movie. So it did pretty well. It beat a lot of expectations, especially since it's in theaters as well as streaming. But as an asterisk, this is the second lowest opening of any Conjuring movie of any in the franchise, right above Annabelle Comes Home. This is the second lowest grossing opening weekend out of 8 films. So in that aspect, it's not that great, as well as you compare to Conjuring 1, which in its opening weekend grossed $41 million, and The Conjuring 2, which grossed $40 million. Once again, the third grossed $24 million. Now, is this because there's less hype? Is this because it's on streaming? Or is this still because it is a pandemic number? We may never know. But the good news is that there's no competitive horror film until July, so it still has 3-4 weeks all to its own if any horror fans are dying to go back to the theaters. But it does show that Warner Brothers, despite releasing films in theaters and HBO Max at the same date, they've gotten 6 opening weekends as number one since they've done this. So I have to say, good on them. It's working.
Yeah.
We'll see how this plays out in the long run. But once again, Conjuring 3, $24 million opening weekend versus a $39 million budget. Not too shabby. But that is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, once again, in theaters as well as HBO Max. And since there is a ghost in this movie, Jake, I thought this is the perfect time, since you also are a big fan of horror movies, to make a list of the top 7 ghost movies. Now, ghost movies doesn't strictly mean horror, and at the same time, it also includes demons, spirits, ghouls, whatever entity beyond the grave that you can expect. Jake, how was it getting this list together?
It was pretty good. I did omit one movie, and I'll either mention that before or towards the end, only just because I've talked about that movie enough and I felt like to omit it. But it was interesting. It was actually interesting coming up with some ghost movies, because I've realized a lot of the horror movies I love are psychological horrors, or like I'm looking at my box set of all 12 Friday the 13th films. Like, I love cheesy slashers and the Halloween movies and stuff like that. So coming up with ghost movies was very interesting. But I was reminded of a lot of movies I really loved. And there's not really a ranking I have. I put them in a rough ranking, but I would say take out all my ranking with a grain of salt, because I pretty much love all these movies equally or love things better than others in certain aspects. But it was definitely tough to rank them.
Yeah, for me, I enjoy horror movies. I can love a lot of them in this genre, but I'm not a big fan. Looking at this list, I'm not the biggest fan of ghost movies, because a lot of them rely on jump scares, and I don't really find them that much fun or entertaining. And a lot of them are just in the same franchise. I'm looking at my list. I don't repeat any franchises on this. So it was kind of hard to come up with ones that I love. But then I also realized not all ghost movies are horror movies. So I got some fun little different genres in here. But beyond that, I'm excited for this list. All right, Jake, what is your number 7 ghost movie?
My number 7 pick for my top 7 ghost movies is the only non-horror movie on here, and that is A Ghost Story, directed by David Lowery and starring Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. I talked about this movie a little bit when we were ranking A24 films. It wasn't on my list, but I kind of talked. It was in that runner-up. I think it's a really well-executed ghost story. Not to keep saying the name of it, but it is. It's basically just, in a non-spoiler way, it is Casey Affleck's ghost named C, who basically is dressed with one of those bed sheets with two big black eyes, and that's it. It's very art house, but it basically follows him seeing time progress around his house from when it was first built by settlers all the way up until he passed and his wife, Rooney Mara, was kind of grieving. And it's so cool. It's so interesting. It's one of my favorite films. I remember watching it and being like, what an interesting story and a way to tell via a ghost point of view. Like, one who can't talk, who can't haunt. I think there's one time he knocks something over and someone sees it, but it's not really a horror movie. It just follows a ghost progression in life before they move on, seeing everything happen around them. It's a good one. It's one of my favorites and has the best 10-minute pie-eating sequence of all movies.
Yeah, I've talked about this film. It's never made any of my lists. It's always been an honorable mention. It's an honorable mention on this list. It is a very unique movie. I remember going to the theaters. I was the only one in the theater. I didn't know what to expect, and I almost walked out at the Rooney Mara pie scene, which lasts 5+ minutes. In the beginning, I hated this movie, and then by the end, when you get into the idea of what is it to be a ghost and life as a ghost and the meaning and finding your significance in life as a ghost, that really got to me. And it's been now almost 4 years. I haven't revisited it. I want to revisit it. I know it's on, I think it's on Netflix right now. A very unique choice. So congratulations. For me at number 7, I'm going in the Conjuring universe. It's not even my favorite Conjuring film, but I feel like no one talks about this movie. So I'm going to talk about it. My number 7 is Annabelle Comes Home. This is the third in the Annabelle trilogy. It's not even my favorite, but it is directly after the opening scene in the first Conjuring movie when Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson bring Annabelle after that opening scene in The Conjuring to their house. They're in it for about 20 minutes throughout the movie, and it is a fun haunted house movie within the Warren family because it stars Judy Warren, not the real life person, but her as a daughter, and she is being babysat one night by these two girls, and they accidentally unlock Annabelle, and so all of the ghosts in their forbidden room come to life, and you have a bunch of different demons in this movie. This could have been a movie that spins off a bunch of different villains. You got this very tense scene with like a game where it's a box and you have to reach inside and figure out what's inside, and they have to get this key, and then you don't know if something's gonna grab them out of it. It can be really intense. I will admit that the film at 1:40, nothing really happens until an hour into the movie, so it is a bit slow. But Gary Dauberman directed this movie, who has worked on all the other Conjuring movies. He wrote them. This was his first directing. I think that he did a great job directing with either certain visuals or camera work. He should have been the one to direct The Conjuring 3. I'm sorry, Michael, but I think Gary Dauberman should have been the director for this movie. It was somewhat financially successful. It grossed $74 million domestically, $231 million worldwide. My number 7, Annabelle Comes Home. Jake, if you're a fan of Vera and Patrick, they're in this movie for around 20 minutes. I'd highly recommend it for that.
I've been trying to figure out how to watch the Annabelle movies. I feel like I need to watch Creation, Annabelle, Annabelle Comes Home. Is that the order?
Well, Annabelle Creation is the prequel to Annabelle, which is the prequel to The Conjuring, which is annoying of itself. But the ending of Annabelle Creation leads directly into the first Annabelle, and it's more fun watching that ending knowing the movie of Annabelle.
Oh, gotcha. So maybe
I'd say watch them in order.
Annabelle, then Annabelle Creation, then Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, one of these days I'm just going to have to sit down and watch them all three. I mean, I'm very interested in them. I think it's just, I need to do it. Like, it's just I haven't had the time, and when I do want to watch a movie, Annabelle's not the first thing that comes to mind.
And it's the first movie is not the finest, so it's tough to start off with that. But if we can agree on something, it is that no one should watch or rewatch The Nun.
Agreed. I don't think that's the one. If I ever start watching the Conjuring universe movies, I might just skip that one.
Despite it being the first chronologically.
Yeah.
All right, number 6, what do you have?
All right, so number 6, I got a classic. I guess you could say it's also a non-horror movie, but it spooked me as a kid, and that is Beetlejuice, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, and Alec Baldwin. When you mentioned demons and poltergeist, that's one of the first things that came to mind was this movie, because Beetlejuice is a demon. That is what he is. So I immediately was like, this is definitely going to be on the list somewhere. It's a movie I watched a million times as a kid, got freaked out a million times because of the scenes where they like contort their faces and all the monsters everywhere. And I think the comedic elements are done well. And of course, Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, and Alec Baldwin, incredible. And the of course, you have the house scene where they're all singing that one song. Daylight come and she won't go home. Great scene. Everyone knows when you hear that song, I think most people think of that scene. But for those who have not watched it, long story short, Beetlejuice is a character, a demon that Winona Ryder and Alec Baldwin summon when they fall on hard times. And of course, you can't trust a demon. And you can't trust Michael Keaton. So all hell breaks loose. Everything happens. It's a great movie. It's one of my favorite Tim Burton films besides the second Batman movie. And yeah, that's my number six pick, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, I've seen the movie back in high school when it was on the 31 Days of Halloween or whatever that freeform ABC Family marathon is. I don't remember it that much. I know a bunch of people love it. I just think it is it was a bit too weird for me to rewatch, even though some imagery has stuck with me for all those years. I just personally, I never grew up watching it, so I don't have an attraction to it. It's not my type of movie after all these years.
And that's totally fair. I think a lot of it just comes from nostalgia and seeing it a bunch of times when I was young.
But I will say that the visuals are very impressive back then and even still to this day. Up for me at number six, I'm going Paranormal Activity 3. I think that this one is my favorite in the franchise. Granted, I haven't rewatched a lot of the movies in this franchise because I don't think that they will hold up as well rewatching them. So it's been a while, but this one is a prequel for the two sisters, Katie and I forget the other one's name, that are in Paranormal Activity 1 and 2, and you see how they kind of evolved in this family of ghosts and this demon. I remember that this was the scariest of the first three, or at least the one with the most or loudest jump scares, which when I was 13, that worked for me. But I like that it expands the universe. And yes, it does fall for the found footage isms of nothing really happens for the first hour, dumb jump scares, and then shit just goes wrong in the last 15, 20 minutes. But I still think that this one in the franchise, personally for me, is the most entertaining. It was very successful financially, $104 million domestically, $207 million worldwide. My number six, Paranormal Activity 3.
Sounds good. I have never seen the Paranormal Activities, and I'm going to keep it that way, you know? I don't think I'm losing much sleep over not seeing any of those. It's like Annabelle, I do want to see. Paranormal Activity, I don't think I'm... I think I started the marked ones. I remember I was in theaters seeing another movie, and I was leaving with friends, and we stepped into that theater, and we sat for like 10 minutes, and I think we all left. Like, no one was in the theater. I think it was like no one bought that showing, and we got bored and left. Because we were like, ooh, maybe we'll get some spooks, and no.
Yeah, I would say after all these years, now that they're not like one of the most popular horror movies during Halloween, they're not that much worth to watch alone at your house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I will say though, it would probably have been so much fun to go to a midnight screening of one of the original three Paranormals.
Oh yeah.
I was too young for it, and sadly, I missed that opportunity.
Same here.
All right, what do you got next? Number five.
What I got next? For number five, I got a classic. I got Poltergeist, directed by Tobe Hooper, who, if no one knows, is the creator of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one of my favorite horror movies. But yeah, Poltergeist, directed by Tobe Hooper, stars Heather O'Rourke, Dominique Dune, Joe Beth, and Zelda Rubinstein. Poltergeist, just like Beetlejuice, was a movie I grew up seeing a lot on TV and was freaked out about. I think it's a well-crafted haunted house movie with really good visuals. One of the ones that always scared me as a kid, there were two. One was the mom's trying to get in to save the kid, and there's this like long-legged demon that's like over the door, like screaming at her, a ghost. And another one, this dude goes into the bathroom and he has a cut on his face and he starts peeling it and he like peels off all his skin. It's a creep, and then he like shakes out of it. But it's like the whole general gist of the movie is it's about this group, this family, the Freelings, and basically their daughter, everyone knows like the line, they're here, and it's these demons kind of start communicating to the daughter and suck her into their realm. And it's basically about the family trying to get her back. And there's all these great scenes where they're communicating through this TV, when you turn on the TV and it was just, you know, the white fuzzy screen and white noise, they would communicate through there. There's a lot of great demon scenes, and it's your typical house built on a burial ground kind of demon movie. So it's got its tropes, but the tropes weren't tropes yet when that came out. And that actually came out in, I was looking this up on 1982. So I think for 1982, it holds up damn good today. Like, I could still watch it. It's still one of those movies that freaks me out.
First off, the sink scene. Love the sink scene. I really enjoy Poltergeist. So I'm not going to say that much because I'm talking about it later.
And quick side note, no one watched the remake they did.
I mean, I did eventually rewatch it, and it's not worth it.
It's not. It's like there's some remakes I will be like, you know what? It's worth it. The Texas Chainsaw remake, different, but it's worth a watch. But Poltergeist, it is trying to just redo it all with CGI, and it loses its horror.
100% agree. Up for me at number 5, I got a movie that I'm pretty sure you do not like, and it has caused some debate in the friend group, but it is Unfriended. This was the first big digital screen or computer face movie in the found footage genre, and I love the dedication and detail, because the entire movie takes place on the screen of a MacBook, one that I'm looking at to you, Jake, right now, with all the apps on the bottom, the time in the top right corner, all everyone's files on the desktop. It's a high school girl's desktop, so she has a bunch of work assignments on it. And pretty much the movie is a group of friends are FaceTiming one night, and they eventually become tormented by the demon of this, or spirit of this girl who died. It's her death anniversary. And I love that you only see the laptop of this one girl, and you see the camera, kind of how I'm looking at you, and you can't see anyone or anything around it. So it does build this mystery of the unknown. And yes, it is a bit slow of a movie, especially for the first 40 minutes. But I think, especially on rewatch, watching it on my laptop, which I think is the most effective way to watch it, it builds the tension, and it's only 80 minutes, which I think it's a nice short movie. It's a fun watch. And I also like it's a somewhat social commentary on social media. Very successful financially, $32.7 million domestically, $64.3 million worldwide on a $1 million budget. My number 5, Unfriended.
Great pick. Do love Unfriended.
So you do like it.
I do like it a lot. I actually like its sequel a little bit better, the sequel. I don't think it was made by the same creators, but I think it's the same general gist, but that one's not a demon, but the Dark Web one.
I never saw that one.
I really like the Dark Web, and I do like Unfriended. I agree, it's slow, but I think for what it is, it's impressive. And, you know, it spawned probably one of my favorite movies, underrated movies of the 2010s, which was Searching. That one did a better job with doing cameras and iPhones, and I think it did more than just a laptop camera.
Yeah.
And Dark Web does the same thing. It has more than just laptop. But I do like Unfriended. I think it's a solid movie. It has some good scares in it, and I like the just whole idea of, while the demon part is obviously, you know, here or there, it feels very surreal because it's something everyone does, especially now more than ever. The past year, we were all in Zoom and Skype calls. It's like, it's the perfect horror movie for the times.
It really was. It came out 5 years too early. All right, now, number 4. What do you have next?
Number 4 for me, now we're getting into some of the movies that you probably will be able to guess for me. And this one will break a rule, and you'll probably know which one. But number 4 for me is Insidious, directed by James Wan and starring Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne, and Ty Simpkins. Insidious was a movie, the first time I watched it, was in a theater long after it had come out. I was at my friend's mom owned a local movie theater that only showed like local movies, like ones made by students and stuff. But when they weren't doing that, we were allowed to go there and watch movies. So we had this whole theater to ourselves, and we decided to watch Insidious. And I was there with my first girlfriend. I remember this vividly, and I remember peeing my pants basically because I was so scared. And so then years later, I decided to rewatch it again and did 1, 2, 3, and 4 all at once. No, 3. I never watched 4. I don't ever plan to. But no, it was 1, 2, and 3. And it just reminded me of how much I love Insidious. It is just quick synopsis, horror story. Ty Simpkins plays a boy who has the ability to astral project his body when he's asleep. But when you do that, demons can smell you and sense you, and they want your body. And in this, there is the lipstick face, Darth Maul looking demon. It's called Lipstick Face, but it's Darth Maul the demon.
Wait, that's actually his name, Lipstick Face?
Yeah, Lipstick Face.
Oh, wow.
And he is kind of like the king of this realm, and he's the one who wants Ty Simpkins' body. And so Patrick Wilson also has this ability, and so it basically kind of goes through this whole story of them trying to get Ty out of the Further, which is what this realm is called. And it has a lot of great visuals, a lot of great horror elements, and sets up a really good sequel, because the sequel directly ties in and shows all the moments of the first from a different point of view, which is why it was tough to pick, because I love one and two equally. I think they both, and that's why what I was mentioning is Patrick Wilson's Insidious, Insidious 5, is going to pick up 10 years later from Insidious 2. The kid's going to be in college, so I'm going to be very interested to see a horror movie that sets place in college.
That's going to be exciting.
Well, it's basically going to follow the same story if he's still able to astral project. So it's going to be cool to see, like, what demons find their way there and how Patrick Wilson's able to save them.
Yeah, I remember back in our Antebellum top 10 horror movies of the 2010s, I'm pretty sure you picked one of the Insidiouses. I think it was this one.
No, I actually didn't. I looked it up because, as I said, it'll come up later, but there are going to be two of the same directors on this list. And I tried to stick because that was my first one, so I was really trying to stick with that rule. But this one, it was hard for me not to.
I never saw any of the Insidious films, even though the first two were before I was into horror movies and before I really knew James Wan. And then 3 and 4, I felt like no one really cared that much about, even though one of them's directed by Lee Whannell. And I love Lee Whannell. One day I could go and watch them. I also like the fact that there is this horror franchise that I haven't seen a single one of the good films for. So if I want to, I can always go and watch one of the Insidious movies. So I can't say that much, but I've heard from a lot of people, it is a great spooky movie.
It is a great spooky movie. And again, I think 1 and 2 are great. I think 3 is underlooked. It's not great, but it's underlooked. Have not seen 4. I definitely will before 5, but I didn't hear much good things about it. But definitely 1 through 3, I think, are a solid trilogy of horror movies.
Maybe one day I'll watch it.
You gotta.
Up for me at number 4, I got horror mixed with comedy, and it is Ghostbusters 2016. That is right. The long-awaited film that I've put on so many honorable mentions is on this list, Ghostbusters 2016, and I have a good reason. The reason is, I never grew up on the original Ghostbusters. I've seen it. I think it is okay. And I don't think this movie is great either, but you know, it came out the summer going into freshman year of college. I worked at a movie theater when it was playing, so I was stuck hearing a lot of the music cues and quotes during the movie, and I think that this movie got so much hate when it came out that it does not deserve. It's directed by Paul Feig, who at the time did some of the best comedies of the 2010s, Spy and Bridesmaids, and it has Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, three great comedic actresses, and Leslie Jones, who I still enjoy to an extent. Chris Hemsworth is also in the movie. I think he's really funny. Yes, he does play an over-the-top dumb character, but sometimes I think it works. I still enjoy the movie. It has a very fun climactic scene in Times Square, and some of the ghost designs are pretty cool. Once again, it's not the best movie. I know a lot of people do not like this because it is not the male original, but I do enjoy it. $128 million domestically, $229 million worldwide. My number 4, Ghostbusters.
I don't think I've seen the new one yet. I grew up on the first two, and that was the reason why I didn't want to see. That's even the reason why I don't know if I want to see the new Ghostbusters, the one about the kids.
But like, Paul Rudd is in it.
I know, that's the part that like would get me, is because Paul Rudd's in it. But it's just, the first two Ghostbusters are two movies I grew up with, and they're definitely both honorable mentions. I just tried to keep more of the horror, like my comedy was Beetlejuice. But I love Ghostbusters. I love the ghost designs, and I'm sure whenever I get around to it, I will enjoy the newer one. But I always hate the people that were like, you don't need to make an all-women remake. I'm like, it actually like looked funny and had some great actresses in it. I'm sure I would laugh a lot. It's just, I think the thing that kept me from watching it is just, it was a remake of a movie franchise that I loved. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I don't want them to ruin this, because the original Ghostbusters are like the dream team. I love them. But again, I love all the actresses you mentioned, and agree about Leslie Jones.
Well, Jake, we are now halfway through our list, so we're actually going to be taking a quick break right now. So we're going to be taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, Anchor, and then we'll get right back to the list. Welcome back from the break, everybody. I am joined by Jake Tracy. We just discussed The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, and we're in the middle of our top 7 ghost movies, and we're at number 3. Jake, what do you have?
All right, for my number 3, this is a movie I've talked about before, but it is Dr. Sleep, directed by Mike Flanagan, starring Ewan McGregor, Rebecca Ferguson, and Kylie Curran, or Curran. But yes, Dr. Sleep, I mentioned it before on our Antebellum one, but I just love this movie. I do love The Shining. It's a tough pick between the two, but for my personal taste, I really go with Dr. Sleep. I really think it's a well-done follow-up. I love Mike Flanagan. His work on The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix, two of my favorite shows. And he did Oculus, which I think is such an underrated horror movie that almost made this list too, but I wanted to only repeat directors once, not twice. So I was like, you know what? I'll leave that movie off. But Oculus, definitely check out. But Dr. Sleep just picks up many years after Danny Torrance has gotten over the events of what happened at the Overlook, but he is still followed by some of the demons, and or he was, and then he figured out how to lock them away in his head. But then one day he meets this girl who has the same shining ability as him, and they also come across this group of people led by Rebecca Ferguson, who basically breathe the pain of a shiner until they die, and basically use that to live eternally. Very crazy concept. Rose the Hat is Rebecca Ferguson's character, and she is incredible in that movie. Ewan McGregor, obviously incredible. And it's such a well-done sequel. Has one of the scariest sequences in modern day horror, which is with Jacob Tremblay as a baseball player. I think whether you like that movie or not, I think all horror fans could probably agree that that is one of the most horrifying scenes, because it is so real and so disturbing, and it involves a child, which just makes it that much more scary. Definitely recommend Dr. Sleep. I do recommend seeing The Shining. You don't have to read the book, because this picks up on Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, not Stephen King's version of The Shining. They are very different. But yeah, I still need to watch the extended director's cut. It's on my to-do list. But yeah, my number three, Dr. Sleep.
Several things to note. Dr. Sleep, the extended cut, 30 minutes longer, so it's 3 hours. So you really gotta like plan out your either afternoon or evening for a 3 hour long movie. Second, if you like Mike Flanagan, I'ma once again suggest Ouija Origin of Evil, the prequel to Ouija that's actually good, not the original horrible movie. And then third, Dr. Sleep, I enjoy the movie. It's made one of my lists, or at least an honorable mention.
Your list for Justice League for longest movies.
Oh yes. I think it was I either honorable mentioned or I definitely did have that on. But I enjoy the movie. When I was thinking of ghost movies, I definitely thought of Shining. I didn't think of Dr. Sleep, but the ghosts do come for the monster mash in the last 30 minutes of the movie, which I do enjoy.
And is a lot. That's what I was thinking. Is The Shining is more of a ghost story. But I do believe the ghosts in the Overlook play an important part in this, and the idea and how he sees the curator, I forget his name, but he sees him in the beginning, and it evolves around the dead and the demons that are in the Overlook. So it was hard for me to pick, and it definitely is bridging the line of a ghost movie, but I think in terms of demons and ghosts, even if they're only in it for 20 minutes, it to me is still a ghost movie.
But overall, good choice. Up for me at number three, once again, we're not going into horror. We're going a bit into comedy or family-friendly comedy, and I got 1995's Casper. Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I knew this was coming. I knew you were going to say this.
There are tons of ghosts in this movie, but they're fun and friendly ghosts. It is such a 90s movie. You got Christina Ricci and Bill Pullman as a dad and daughter dynamic. They move into this new house, and it is haunted by the three ghosts and Casper. I was never a big fan of Casper growing up, but this movie, for some reason, was always on HBO or Freeform, and I've watched it, and I really enjoy it. There's also a Dan Aykroyd Ghostbusters cameo, one of the most random things in this movie of the mid-90s, but whatever. At the time, groundbreaking visual effects, and to this day, I was looking up some clips. They still hold up. I think the movie is cute. I love the Cinderella-type ending. The music is really good, in my opinion, and it was very successful financially. $100 million domestically, $282 million worldwide. Wow. My number three ghost movie, Casper.
I love that. It's been a while, but I do remember Casper being on all the time when I was young and watching it, and my aunt having a VHS of it. So I do remember. It's a great movie. It's one of those ones that I thought about for this list, but it's just been so long that I just didn't want to add it, so I was like, ah, it's been a bit. I need to rewatch it. But honestly, solid pick. I love Casper.
It's been a long time for me as well, and I just said, screw it. Casper's getting on the list. All right, what do you got next up? Number two.
Number two, one that was my number one in the Antebellum podcast, and that is Sinister, directed by Scott Derrickson starring Ethan Hawke, James Ranson, and Juliet Rylas. Sinister is just one of those movies I tell everyone, if you're a horror fan, you need to watch it. It is truly one of the best well-crafted, scariest movies around a haunted house, a family, and a really well-crafted demon that got ruined in a sequel. Never watch Sinister 2. I hate that movie. But Sinister itself should have just stayed as its solo thing. But actually, it's in the opening credits to anything by Blumhouse. You see the little girl dragging her hand across the wall. That is from Sinister. Uh-huh. Like, I love how that, like, moment, it's not exactly like that, but in Sinister, there is a moment like that. And it just makes me so happy that, like, how much you can tell Blumhouse, like, love this movie. Great movie, follows Ethan Hawke. He's a writer, and he's a horror writer, and he moves into a house where there were murders that took place to try to get more inspiration. Obviously not a good idea. White people do that stuff all the time in horror movies. And this demon, Bagul, great demon, great name, like Bagul, like, but things don't go well in the end for Mr. Hawk. I will say that. But yeah, Sinister, great film, one of my favorite horror films of the 2010s. It is, though this list compared to the last one has had a lot of movements and changes, I can tell you that. But yeah, my number two pick, Sinister, cannot talk enough about it.
I feel bad. It's been 8 months since you first told me about Sinister on the show, and you told me to watch it, especially during Halloween, and I haven't watched Sinister. I'm sorry, Jake.
It's fine.
One of these days.
And actually, you know, the fun fact is Scott Derrickson is also the director of Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Which came out 4 years after, and that's kind of, I think Sinister, or I think it was The Exorcism of Emily, something like that, was like the last horror movie he did.
And then he was going to do Doctor Strange 2, but now he's left, and now it's Sam Raimi's film. But Sinister, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't say that much. Once again, you know, Halloween is just around the corner in 4 months. I can watch it then.
I really think it's one of those ones that everyone will enjoy and say, it's a good scary movie, but I think it just was one of those ones that I remember watching and being like, that's how you direct it, that's how you get good characters, all that.
Up for me at number two is one that we've somewhat already talked about. It is the only repeat from any other list I've had, and it is The Shining. It is one of the most famous horror movies of all time. I love the slow pace that eventually builds into the intense third act over the course of 2.5 hours. Stanley Kubrick, so many impactful shots, such great ideas and designs. I love the cool different ghosts that we see throughout the film, whether it's the bartender, the lady in the bathtub, the twins, the guy in the mysterious dog or bear costume that no one really knows about unless you've read the book. I love it. It's great. And one of these days, I want to see it in a theater, in an art house theater, with a sold out crowd in the Halloween season. I think that would be great. 44 million domestically, 45.6 million worldwide. My number two, The Shining.
I was about to say, great pick. And it obviously was so tough for me to pick. And I just picked the one I'm seeing more recent to, but definitely for me, Dr. Sleep. And The Shining, very interchangeable for me. I love them both. And I agree. I would love to one of these days watch that. Like, even on, like, 35 millimeter film. There it is. 35 millimeter film. Or even if they somehow put it on Super 8, that would have been cool, too. It'd probably be so crappy, but it'd be cool. But I definitely feel like that's one of those movies that is, if you've never seen it, you need to make sure you're in the right environment to see it, because it is such an atmospheric film and directed well and just, so good. It's a great one. Great pick.
All right, Jake. Now, before we get to our number one, of course, there are films that have not made our list. So what were some films on your honorable mentions that just didn't make your list?
Definitely Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, The Shining. One that I don't know if you've seen, but The Fog, by John Carpenter.
No.
One of John Carpenter's most underrated films. It stars Jamie Lee Curtis in it as well. Great one. It's just about a town that gets haunted by these ghosts of dead sailors. It's like six of them. And it's very gory and violent because they're like ghosts, but they can like use their like swords and stuff to like cut people. It's crazy. But such a good atmospheric film and a really great score to it. But yeah, those are a couple of my honorable mentions there.
Yeah, for me, a lot of the honorable mentions are stuff that we've mentioned already. A Ghost Story, Justin Make my top seven, Annabelle Creation, but I talked about that film already. The Conjuring 2, but I've talked about that film already, and it probably would be up here. And I think that's, from the top of my list, that's really all that I could really think of. These just didn't make my list. But without further ado, Jake, the number one ghost movie of all time, what's your number one?
My number one ghost movie? Conjuring 2. Conjuring 2. I had a very tough time picking because on Antebellum list, I think I mentioned Conjuring.
Yeah.
But since then, I've just been thinking about it. I know I rewatched them both at some point where they were like on TV. But Conjuring 2, I think, is just the pinnacle of great direction, great scares, great ghosts slash demons, and great characters. Like, it has all the greats for a perfect ghost film. And that's the thing, is I wouldn't say like horror in general, it's up there. But when we're looking at films and ranking them based on ghosts, ghouls, and all that, The Conjuring 2 is just a no-brainer for me. The story on that one, it follows the Hodgkins, but it's the Enfield haunting, which was a famous case out of Britain. And it actually has a lot of photos taken during it. Now, granted, when you look at those photos, there's the one of like the girl jumping in the air when she said she was levitating. But obviously, the big thing about this was a lot of people thought the family were just, they were already poor, and they thought they were trying to fake it to make money. And that's when Ed and Lorraine came in and said, like, no, they are actually being haunted. And that was also the introduction of Valak.
Valak the Nun.
A great demon that was screwed over, but a great demon and one of my favorite antagonists as a ghost and demon in horror history. I think Valak was wonderfully introduced in that movie in the beginning and wonderfully had a great ending, and I wish that was either her ending or when they decided to create the nun, they decided to do it better. But that is neither here nor there. But yes, The Conjuring 2, it's hard for me to pick, but Conjuring and Conjuring 2 are equal, but I just love the visuals, the demons, and the overall story of Conjuring 2. And obviously, as we mentioned before, Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga.
I've talked about before, I do prefer The Conjuring 2. And as you said, it's the combination of great direction from James Wan again. And while it is another haunted house film like the first one, it's different in whether it's the setting, the scares, the demon of Valak the Nun. And there was that interview scene with Patrick Wilson not looking at the person he's interviewing. Yeah. And you see out of focus, the kid in the chair turns into the demon out of focus. You can't really see it. And then by the end of the interview, he turns back into the kid. That's just something so subtle and unnecessary, but it's so great and impactful. I like it. And funny you mentioned about Valak of how well she's incorporated into The Conjuring 2. I did some research this past weekend. The Conjuring 2 came out in June of 2016, and they did reshoots for the movie in March of 2016, 3 months before it came out, and they introduced everything about the nun in that 1 month period. It was an extremely last minute decision, and it was a very well worth last minute decision.
It was very well worth, because I think the Ben Wilkinson is like the demon that's in the girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the whole idea. I'll try not to spoil it, but it's been so long, I feel like people have seen this movie, but it's not really Ben Wilkinson is not in control of himself. Like, it's interesting to find a story about a demon who's not even in control of his own demonic stuff. And I think that's one of the best parts of this movie. And I did not know that either, but I think Valak was the best introduction, the best antagonist that they could have ever put in the Conjuring universe. And I don't know, part of me just wanted to see 3 have more of Valak. It's not like you kill a demon, they are able to get it out of the girl, but it's not like you just go and you kill the demon, like they basically got it out. But it's definitely a movie that is just so well crafted, and I can't speak enough about it. As a ghost film, I think it is just S tier ghost film.
100%. All right, now up for me, for my number one, we've already mentioned it today on the list, and I'm here to talk about my number one ghost movie, Poltergeist, 1982. Don't worry, it's not the remake. This is, in my mind, the original Paranormal Activity, the original Haunted House movie. As you said, it is directed by Tobe Hooper. Or is it directed by Steven Spielberg? There are some reports that Steven Spielberg, not on purpose, but was a ghost director on this film. Because at its core, it does feel very Spielbergian, one may say. But I love, there's so many iconic moments, as you said. The They're Here line, the clown, I love the clown scenes. The tree that tries to kidnap the kid, I love. And of course, the face peeling off scene in the bathroom. It really pushed the limit for what was PG back in 1982. Don't watch the remake. It uses way too much CGI. There's no heart and soul in it. This one is the one to watch. It is a great Halloween film, and for little kids, it's like just scary enough that it could scar them, but not horrible that they can't watch it. And I love the surprise twist with the ancient Indian burial ground and the extra fourth act. I love that surprise. 74.7 million domestically, 121.7 million worldwide in 1982 money. My number one, Poltergeist.
A great film. One of those ones that definitely, if I see it, it's been a while, so I feel like if I see it again, it's going to move up pretty fast. But yeah, I remember it was just scary enough, like when I was young, that it scarred me, but then the second time I watched it, I enjoyed it more, and then probably the most recent time I watched it, I kind of loved the craft of it. But I always forget about that whole debate of if it was Spielberg or Tobe Hooper. It has elements of both. I find the remake so sad because Sam Raimi produced it.
Yeah.
And I know he created Evil Dead, one of the most iconic horror films. And that's probably one that I'm now just thinking should have been on my list because it is about a demon.
Yeah, I just realized we forgot about the first or second Evil Dead movie.
Yeah. I mean, the remake's also really good too, but the OG one, the second one is kind of demon. I would probably put that on the middle bit. But yeah, no, the first one is one I totally missed, and now I'm mad at myself because that is a top tier movie. It's freaky, it's well done, and you gotta love Ash, the lead character. But yeah, no, it just made me sad that Sam Raimi produced the remake in 2015 for Poltergeist, and I was like, okay, maybe it'll be good, and then it was, nope, it's just a shot for shot.
It's just a rule. Don't try to remake something that doesn't need to be remade. It's that simple.
Exactly. Like, there's some movies that, like, yeah, if you remake it and do it well, it could work, but you have to be remaking a movie that isn't already a classic. And Poltergeist is a ghost classic.
And sadly, they just had to put their hands back on it. Well, Jake, that is now our top 7 ghost movies. I really hope, because of this list, we do not get possessed by any ghosts. That would really be a downer for our for our summer. But I really enjoy talking about these movies. I love talking about these spooky movies with you, as well as talking about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Jake, once again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. Do you have anything that you're looking forward to? Anything you want to shout out, or something that you're excited to see or watch, or that you're currently watching?
I don't have much right now. I am just, I'm excited for, on the non-horror note, I'm excited for Loki this Wednesday, and I'm excited for Love, Victor Season 2 this Friday, so I got 2 shows coming out. But no, I have a lot of movies I'm pumped for that are coming out in the latter half of this year. Chief among them, after seeing the most recent trailer, Last Night in Soho. And I'm super pumped for the Fear Street trilogy coming to Netflix. Getting to see an R.L. Stine book turn to a rated R trilogy, I'm pumped for that. I know it's not Goosebumps. I know Fear Street, I never read it. I only read Goosebumps. But to see an R.L. Stine written book turned into a rated R movie, and not only just one, but 3, I'm pumped for those. As a horror fan, that will be a must watch for those 3 weeks of July.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting because it's, I feel like it's one of the first times that not only are they having 3 movies, they're releasing them 1 week after another. So for 3 consecutive weeks, we're getting a new Fear Street movie, which a concept itself sounds very cool. But going back to another thing you said, Love, Victor. If you're a fan of Love, Victor, Victor, the main guy in it, is in Annabelle Comes Home.
Really?
Going back to Annabelle Comes Home, he is one of the male love interests in that film. So that's just a fun little tidbit. Well, once again, Jake, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. And audiences, if you don't know, like Jake, you can actually support the show, Mr. Movie, by going to anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support. You can donate $10, $5, or just $1 a month. Anything would mean so much to us. Jake, I love you. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
I love you too, man. Thanks for having me.
And audiences, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next time.
See you later.